A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been watching packages from Chinaland and Tel Aviv in under a week, and he wants to know what's actually happening under the hood. The surface story is Kanye got fast. The real story is consolidation. Not the old school containerization everyone knows, but multi-layer consolidation hitting at different points in the supply chain. Pre-export bundling inside China. Mid-chain regional hubs like Dubai. And last-mile aggregation in big geographies like the U. His question is basically, where are these consolidation points? Why do they work? And what do they tell us about how trade routes are being reshaped right now?
The timing on this is perfect, because what we're seeing is the old one-route-per-country model breaking in real time. Small markets, Israel, the Gulf states, individual Southeast Asian countries, none of them generate enough volume on their own to justify a dedicated air freight route from Shenzhen. The math doesn't work, but consolidate 5 or 6 of those markets through a single hub, and suddenly you've got enough density to fill a freighter every day. That's the shift. It's not just about packing boxes more efficiently. It's about making routes exist that couldn't exist before.
The package lands in under a week, and it feels like magic, but the machine that gets it there started running before the seller even taped the box shut. That's the part most people miss.
Here's the thing that makes this interesting. Consolidation itself is ancient. Euroboxes stack onto pallets. Pallets load into shipping containers. That's the physical layer, and it's been optimized to death since the 1950s. What's new isn't the idea of bundling things together. It's where in the chain you do it.
Right, because containerization solved the physical problem. Standardize the box, and suddenly every port, crane, and truck on the planet can handle your cargo. That was the revolution. But it only consolidated stuff that was already headed to the same place. You still needed enough volume on a single route to fill the container in the first place.
And that's the ceiling traditional containerization hits. If you're a seller in Yiwu shipping to Israel, you don't have a container's worth of goods. You have maybe 3 boxes. So historically, those 3 boxes got handed off to a freight forwarder who cobbled together space on whatever was going vaguely toward the Mediterranean. Slow, expensive, unpredictable. What Kanyao and others figured out is that you can consolidate before the container even enters the picture, at the order level, across multiple sellers, across multiple destination countries. That's a completely different animal.
The old model consolidates boxes that share a destination. The new model consolidates demand that shares a direction, then figures out the destination later.
That's the distinction. And it's why we're seeing this now rather than 20 years ago. You need real-time data on what's being ordered, where it's going, and what else is moving through the pipeline at the same moment. Without that visibility, pre-export consolidation across sellers is just chaos. With it, you can bundle orders from 6 different merchants in Guangzhou, route them through Dubai, and split them out to Tel Aviv, Riyadh, and Amman on the other side.
Which is where the 3 layers Daniel's pointing at come in. The China side bundling, the Dubai-style mid-chain hub, and then the last-mile aggregation in places like the U, where the geography itself demands it. Same principle at each stage, but the mechanics and the economics shift depending on where you are in the chain.
The thread running through all three is that consolidation isn't just about saving money. It's about making routes viable at all. That's the piece most coverage misses. It's framed as a cost story, but it's really a market access story.
I want to linger on that for a second, because it's easy to nod along and then immediately forget what market access actually means here. Take a concrete case, a seller in Yiwu making phone accessories. 10 years ago, that seller could reach the EU and Western Europe, because those routes had volume. Those were afterthoughts. The seller literally could not get their product to a customer in Amman at a price that made sense. Not it was expensive. It was functionally impossible. The route didn't exist as a commercial reality. What consolidation does is create the route, and then the market appears behind it.
and it's worth sitting with how strange that inversion is. We're used to thinking that demand creates supply. Enough people in Israel want phone cases, and eventually someone builds a shipping lane. But that's backward for small markets. The demand was always there. It just couldn't express itself because the logistics didn't pencil out. The supply chain had to arrive first, and then the demand became visible.
The infrastructure creates the market, not the other way around.
Which is a genuinely counterintuitive way to think about trade. But it's what we're watching happen in real time. Take the first layer. What's happening inside China before the package even leaves? AliExpress started doing something about 5 years ago that changed the economics entirely. If you order three things from three different sellers in Guangzhou, those orders used to ship as three separate parcels, three customs declarations, three airway bills, three times the minimum charge per piece. Now, Cainiao runs consolidation warehouses in Yiwu, Guangzhou, and Shenzhen, where those orders get pulled together into a single outbound parcel.
From the seller's perspective, they ship locally to a warehouse in the same province. From the buyer's perspective, one tracking number, one customs clearance. The bundling happens invisibly.
That invisibility is the point. The seller doesn't need to know whether their widget is sharing a box with a phone case from across town. Cainiao's system matches orders at the warehouse level using purchase data. It knows what's coming before the physical goods even arrive. That's the data layer making the physical layer possible.
Which means the consolidation decision happens at the moment of purchase, not at the loading dock. Someone in Tel Aviv clicks buy on three items, and somewhere in a server rack, those three orders get flagged for the same consolidation batch before any of them have been picked off a shelf.
And the cost difference is dramatic. Individual small parcels shipped internationally might cost $8 to $12 each in freight. Consolidated into a single outbound parcel, you're looking at maybe $3 to $4 per order. For low-margin goods, which is most of what moves on AliExpress, that's the difference between viable and not viable.
How does that actually work on the warehouse floor? Because I can picture the data side, servers matching orders, but the physical reality of three different sellers shipping three different packages that arrive at three different times, and then someone has to physically open those packages and repack them together.
That's the part that sounds like it should be chaos, but isn't. And it's because of how the consolidation warehouses are laid out. They're not traditional warehouses where goods sit on shelves waiting to be picked. They're cross-dock facilities. Packages arrive from local sellers, get scanned, and immediately get sorted into outbound bins organized by destination batch. The system has already assigned each incoming package to a specific outbound consolidated parcel before it even arrives. So the physical process is scan, sort, bundle, seal. A package might spend 90 minutes in the facility.
So it's less like a warehouse and more like a sorting machine that happens to have walls.
And that speed is what makes the economics work. If consolidation added 3 days of processing time, you'd lose the transit advantage. But because the data layer pre-resolved all the routing decisions, the physical layer just executes.
Layer 1 solves the per-unit economics, but it still leaves the route problem. Even the consolidated parcel from Guangzhou still needs to get to Tel Aviv, and the direct flight options are limited.
Which is where Layer 2 kicks in, and this is where Dubai enters the picture. Jebel Ali Port and the Dubai South Logistics Corridor have become the archetype for mid-chain consolidation in this part of the world. Cainiao opened their Dubai hub in 2021, and it now processes over 1 million packages a day serving 12 Middle Eastern markets. Goods from multiple Chinese consolidation centers fly into one point, get resorted by final destination, and fly out again.
Which on paper sounds like you're adding a step, China to Dubai to Tel Aviv, instead of China to Tel Aviv direct. That should be slower.
Should be, but isn't. And the reason is volume density. A direct Guangzhou to Tel Aviv freighter needs enough packages to fill a plane every single day to be economical. Israel alone doesn't generate that volume. But when you aggregate Israel, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, Jordan, and a handful of others through Dubai, you've got a full freighter daily, sometimes multiple. The extra hop adds maybe 6 to 8 hours on the ground. But the alternative without consolidation was your package sitting in a warehouse in Shenzhen for 4 days waiting for enough volume to justify a flight.
The hub isn't a detour. It's the thing that makes the direct route unnecessary. You're trading a physical stop for the elimination of a waiting period, and the total transit drops from 2 or 3 weeks to 5 to 7 days.
precisely the trade-off. Before 2020, China to Israel packages often routed through Europe, Frankfurt, Liège, sometimes Istanbul, and delivery took 2 to 3 weeks because no one was running dedicated Middle East air freight at scale. The Abraham Accords changed the political calculus, and the logistics followed within 18 months.
That's the piece I think gets underreported. The Accords weren't just handshakes and embassy openings. They made it possible for an Israeli logistics company to operate in Jebel Ali Free Zone, for joint customs procedures to exist, for a package bound for Tel Aviv to be treated as routine cargo in a UAE hub rather than something requiring special handling.
The technical mechanism that makes the hub work at speed is what Kanyao calls their smart hub technology. RFID tags on every parcel, AI-driven sortation systems that read destination data and route packages to the correct outbound pallet within hours of arrival. Customs pre-clearance happens while the goods are in the air. The paperwork is processed before the plane lands. So the hub really is just a speed bump. Goods arrive, get scanned, get sorted, get reloaded. The physical stop is minimal because the informational stop already happened.
Virtual inventory in practice. The system knows what's on the plane before the plane touches down. By the time the cargo door opens, every package already has its next flight assigned.
That's the difference between a hub that adds delay and a hub that enables speed. Old school transshipment meant goods sitting in a warehouse until someone figured out where they were going next. The Kanyao model means goods never stop moving in an informational sense. They're always already routed. The physical handoff is just catching up to the data.
I want to put a finer point on the customs pre-clearance piece because it's one of those things that sounds like a minor efficiency, but is actually the entire game. In the old model, a package arrives in a country, sits in a customs bonded area, and someone reviews the paperwork. That could take a day, could take three. Meanwhile, the package is just sitting there. With pre-clearance, the customs review happens while the plane is in the air. The package lands already cleared. It goes straight from the aircraft to the sortation system to the outbound truck or plane. You've eliminated not just a physical delay, but an informational bottleneck.
That's where the political layer intersects with the technical layer in a really specific way. Pre-clearance requires customs authorities in two countries to trust each other's documentation and share data in real time. That's not a technology problem. The APIs exist. It's a diplomatic problem. The Abraham Accords created the trust framework that made the data sharing possible. Before that, you couldn't just route Israeli-bound cargo through a UAE hub with seamless customs. The political relationship didn't support it.
The RFID tag and the AI sorter are doing the visible work, but the precondition for any of that work is a bilateral agreement signed in a conference room.
And that's why you can't just copy-paste the Dubai model to any region. The technology is replicable. The politics often isn't.
You've got layer 1 collapsing per unit costs inside China, layer 2 collapsing route viability through Dubai. And the threat between them is that in both cases, consolidation isn't trimming expenses at the margin, it's building the route from scratch. Without layer 1, the per parcel cost kills the business model. Without layer 2, the per route volume kills the flight schedule.
That brings us to layer 3, and this one flips the geography. In China, last-mile delivery is fragmented among a dozen local courier companies. You've got SF Express, ZTO, YTO, Yunda, each with their own territory, their own systems. Consolidation at the last mile there is messy and incomplete. But in the U, the last mile is where consolidation gets industrialized.
Because the U is enormous, and the population is spread out in a way that makes individual point-to-point delivery ruinously expensive. You can't have a truck drive from a fulfillment center in Kentucky to every house in a 100-mile radius. You'd go bankrupt on fuel alone.
And Amazon figured this out with their delivery station model. Packages arrive from fulfillment centers, sometimes dozens of them at a single delivery station. That station's entire job is to aggregate by zip code, by route, by driver. Within 2 hours, everything gets sorted and handed off to the people actually putting boxes on doorsteps. Same-day delivery isn't magic. It's a consolidation point sitting between the long-haul network and the neighborhood street.
UPS Worldport in Louisville is the same principle at staggering scale. Over 2 million packages a day, all arriving from everywhere, getting sorted in a facility so automated that a package spends less than 15 minutes inside before it's assigned to its outbound flight or truck. It's a physical manifestation of the same logic we saw in Dubai. The hub is speed bump, not bottleneck.
What's interesting is that this last mile consolidation layer is creating a whole new category of logistics company. Flexport, Project 44, these are middle mile optimization players. They don't own planes or trucks. They own the data layer that decides which consolidation point a package should hit based on real-time cost, weather, congestion, and carrier capacity.
It's a logistics operating system. The physical goods move through whichever hub makes sense at that exact moment, and the decision isn't made by a human dispatcher. It's made by software that's recalculating every few seconds.
That's the abstraction layer, and it means a package from a warehouse in New Jersey bound for Miami might consolidate through Atlanta today and Charlotte tomorrow, depending on which route has space and which carrier is cheapest at that hour. The route isn't fixed. It's negotiated in real time by algorithms.
There's a fun analogy here that I think makes this tangible. The old model is like a train network with fixed tracks. You ship from station A to station B, and the route is predetermined. What Flexport and Project 44 are doing is more like the way internet packets move. Each package finds the optimal path through the network at the moment it's sent, and two packages going to the same address might take completely different routes because network conditions shifted between them.
That's exactly the right analogy, and it's why these companies describe themselves as building the operating system for global trade, rather than building a logistics company. They're not in the business of moving boxes. They're in the business of making decisions about how boxes should move, and then contracting the actual movement to whoever has capacity at that moment.
Which loops back to the geopolitical piece we touched on with Dubai. The Abraham Accords didn't just normalize relations. They made it possible for Israeli logistics firms to set up operations in Jebel Ali Free Zone, to share customs procedures with Emirati counterparts, to treat a package bound for Tel Aviv as routine cargo in a UAE hub. That's not just politics enabling trade, that's politics enabling the specific consolidation architecture we've been describing.
The consumer-facing result is that niche markets stop being niche. If you're in Israel ordering something from AliExpress, you're not an isolated customer at the end of a long, expensive route. You're part of a regional block that gets served as efficiently as Western Europe. The Dubai hub makes Israel functionally adjacent to a much larger market.
For businesses, the implication is even sharper. You don't need to hold inventory in 12 Middle Eastern countries. You hold it in one hub, and the consolidation layer handles the distribution. Your inventory carrying costs collapse because you're serving 12 markets from a single stockpile.
That's the race right now. Kenyao has the Dubai play. Amazon Global is building out its own hub network. Traditional freight forwarders are scrambling to offer something comparable. Whoever controls the most efficient consolidation points controls access to markets that were previously too small to matter individually, but too numerous to ignore collectively.
The package on the doorstep is the final frame of a film that started rolling weeks earlier, in a warehouse in Yiwu, with a server somewhere deciding it would share a box with two other orders and fly through Dubai rather than Frankfurt. The consolidation is the plot.
If you're a small e-commerce seller listening to this, the takeaway is practical. Don't negotiate separate logistics contracts for every country you ship to. Find a partner that already operates a multi-country consolidation hub. Kenyao's Dubai setup, Flexport's regional centers, whatever matches your geography, and route everything through that single point. You're not buying 12 shipping lanes. You're buying one lane that fans out on the other end.
The per-country approach is a trap. You end up paying small volume rates on every route because none of them individually justify a discount. Consolidate through a hub, and suddenly your aggregate volume gets you the pricing of a much larger operation.
On the consumer side, the signal to watch for is delivery speed to small markets. If a seller promises 7-day delivery to Israel or Bahrain or Oman, that's not luck, and it's not premium air freight on a dedicated route. It's a consolidation hub somewhere in the chain. The slow boat from China is dead for most product categories, and the thing that killed it wasn't faster planes, it was smarter bundling.
Which is also a useful filter for whether a seller has a real supply chain, or is just dropshipping from a warehouse they've never seen. The 7-day promise, backed by actual tracking through a known hub, tells you there's infrastructure behind it. The 30-day estimate with a tracking number that goes silent for 2 weeks tells you there isn't.
Stepping back, there's a broader point here that connects the logistics to the policy. The Abraham Accords made the Dubai hub politically possible. But the hub then made the accords tangible for ordinary consumers in a way that diplomatic statements never could. You can sign a normalization agreement and most people shrug. But when their AliExpress orders start arriving in 5 days instead of 3 weeks, the policy suddenly has a physical footprint in their lives.
Policy enables infrastructure. Infrastructure makes policy real. They're codependent in a way that gets missed when we treat trade agreements as purely political documents. The accords didn't just open embassies. They opened a flight corridor that now moves 1 million packages a day through a UAE hub to markets that were previously logistical afterthoughts.
Consolidation is the force multiplier. Trade liberalization sets the rules, but consolidation builds the routes that make those rules matter. Without the hub architecture, the accords are just handshakes. With it, their next-day delivery.
I think there's a counterfactual here worth sketching out. Imagine the accords get signed, but no one builds the consolidation hub. Israeli consumers can technically buy from UAE sellers and vice versa, but the logistics are still a mess. Indirect routing, high costs, unpredictable delivery. The political agreement exists on paper, but it doesn't change anyone's daily experience. That's actually the norm for most trade agreements. They get signed, tariffs drop, and nothing feels different because the physical infrastructure to move goods at scale wasn't part of the deal.
And what's unusual about the Accords to Dubai Hub sequence is how fast the infrastructure followed the policy. 18 months from handshake to operational hub processing 1 million packages a day. That's breakneck speed for logistics infrastructure. Normally, you're looking at 3 to 5 years minimum for a facility of that scale.
Which suggests Kanyao and others had the plans sitting in a drawer, waiting for the political green light. The consolidation architecture was already designed. They just needed the permission structure.
That's the lesson for anyone watching other regions. The technical blueprint exists. The question is always whether the politics will allow it to be deployed. Where does this go next? The consolidation playbook is still being written, and the next chapter is going to be weird. As AI-driven demand forecasting gets better, I think we're heading towards something you could call dynamic consolidation, where the hub itself isn't fixed. The system looks at real-time order patterns across a region and decides, on the fly, whether this week's volume should route through Dubai or Riyadh or maybe a temporary surge hub in Amman.
Which means the physical infrastructure stays put, but the routing logic floating on top of it becomes fluid. The warehouse in Dubai is always there, but the algorithm might decide that for the next 72 hours, packages bound for the Levant skip Dubai entirely and consolidate through a different node because demand shifted. That's not a logistics network anymore. That's a logistics nervous system.
The real frontier is intra-regional consolidation. A single hub for all of Southeast Asia, for example. The economics are screaming for it, but the political barriers are still real. India and Pakistan don't have a trade route you can build a hub on. Parts of Southeast Asia have customs regimes that don't talk to each other. The hardware is ready, the software is ready, the politics isn't.
Which is the same lesson the Abraham Accords taught us in Fast Forward. The consolidation architecture was technically possible for years before 2020. What it needed was a political permission structure. And once that clicked into place, the logistics followed in months, not decades.
The package on your doorstep, that box from AliExpress that showed up in 5 days, is the final output of a system optimizing across three variables that don't normally sit in the same sentence: politics, physics, and data. The politics opens the corridor. The physics moves the goods. The data decides where and when to bundle them. And consolidation is the hidden variable that makes all three legible to each other.
It's the quiet thing that turns handshakes into delivery routes, and delivery routes into next-day expectations. Most people will never think about it. They'll just notice the package got faster.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 3rd century BCE, mathematicians in Djibouti developed a precursor to probability theory based on counting camel footprints at watering holes, believing that the pattern of overlapping tracks could predict future caravan arrivals. The theory was abandoned when someone pointed out that camels don't walk in statistically independent directions.
So the entire field collapsed because someone looked at an actual camel.
That's going to sit with me.
This has been my weird prompts. If you want to send us your own question, logistics, supply chains, or anything else that rewards a deep dive, email the show@myweirdprompts.com. We read everything.
I'm Herman Pobbleberry.
I'm Korn. We'll be back.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.